We're going to start in a few seconds, just let a few people come in. Who of you is already using Azure Pack, Windows Azure Pack, or did the hands, had the hands on the Azure Pack stack? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay. Who in the audience has absolutely no clue about Azure Pack, what it is? Don't be shy, so we can set the level of the session. You don't count.
No one? Okay, okay.
Okay, so...
1 more minute.
We'll start in a minute.
And we are in Switzerland, we start on time.
There are people coming. Come in, come in!
Run, Forrest, run!
Yeah, let's start.
Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome to our session, which is called Lessons Learned from Real-World Deployments of Windows Azure Pack. My name is Michel Lüscher. I'm a data center and cloud architect at Microsoft, and I'm co-presenting with Michael.
My name is Michael Riffley. I'm working at ID Netix as a cloud architect, and I'm also MVP for cloud and data center management. And together with Michel Lüscher, we will show you some things about Azure Pack, how to do it, or let's say, let's show the topics.
So maybe we talk about different things today. So it's a real-world deployment scenario we want to cover. So that means we talk about different experience we gained in the last, let's say, 1 or 2 years since Windows Azure Pack is available. We don't going to show you what Azure Pack is in detail. So we assume that you have already some basic knowledge about that. We want to talk about some do's and don'ts and some issues you could avoid or best practices you could apply. And sneak peek on the future. So don't expect that we're going to share roadmap details. If that is your expectation, I think you will get a great coffee outside because we will not cover that. So I'm really sorry to disappoint you if you are here for roadmap discussions. So just to set a little bit of an expectation, like what Azure Pack means, you know that that is available as a free download from Microsoft, and it should give you an Azure experience in your own data center. It has different components, and the main difference to Azure is that we are going to build on Windows Server and System Center, and then have some basic functionality like VM deployment, database deployment, website deployment, and have a beautiful HTML5 portal which gives a tenant and an administrative perspective on your services, offers, roles, and whatever you want to have in your data center. So the power of Windows Azure Pack is actually the extensibility. So we have REST APIs, and then you can add additional resource providers. Compared to Azure, though, we just give you a limited amount of services. So if you look at the left side of the portal, then there are just a few resource providers on Azure. That's why it takes so long to load the portal. Actually, there are quite a few resource provider more available. But that's something which is just a design decision at the moment. What you need to build a Windows Azure Pack environment is System Center, as mentioned, mainly System Center Virtual Machine Manager if you want to deploy virtual machines, SPF for the multi-tenancy, and Service Management Automation, SMA, for some tweaks and optimizations and runbooks and all the magic in the back end. Now, what's also very important to know is that you could add your own portal as well. So it doesn't mean that you need to stick to the Windows Azure Pack portal. You can add whatever you want and you like. So we have some customers which are using an own developed portal, and that looks probably really, really nice. But quite a few would like to look similar to Microsoft. Personally, I like to have a differentiation to the Microsoft Azure portal. I don't want to mix or confuse customers and say, well, we have the same because it's our own offering to the market. And enterprise customers probably have an internal service management tool already, so they want to integrate as well into the API layer. Everything is possible, and we're going to cover more about that in just a second. So design questions, and these are actually kind of the top five, six, top something, which are always coming up. So it's kind of very confusing to understand, if you have Windows Azure Pack, can we do that on a single box, or do we need, what do we need, actually?
I mean, you can do it on a single box for POC deployments, for tests. Let's say you want to have a quick overview of what it is, how to install it. You can do it on a single box, but of course, In a productive deployment, you have a lot more machines to deploy the required roles, like VMM, SPF, and all the Azure Pack components are spread onto different machines, load balanced for high availability, and so on. So on. You don't install it on a single box in production, no.
Okay, so I need to buy more notebooks then to get that done. But don't tell me I need multiple ID forests.
Yeah, that's a good question, because some parts of Azure Pack are public facing. So where the tenants, if we talk about the service provider, that's where the tenant ends up on the portal. So that's the public facing part of Azure Pack. It shouldn't be in an internal Active Directory domain where all your fabric resources or your administrative resources live. So you should separate it. We will cover that in the architecture slide a little bit later, a possible distribution of AD forests, but definitely you need more than one in a best practice.
I have public-facing services.
If you have public-facing, but at least we recommend to have at least a single dedicated forest for all the fabric resources. Let's say compute, storage, VMM, SPF, which is really close to the fabric management, should be in a dedicated forest.
Who from the audience is actually working for a service provider hoster? Maybe show hands.
Very.
Quite a few.
I didn't expect a lot. But
and the others are all enterprises, or who is working for an enterprise standard company? Okay. And then that means the third part is service system integrator. Is that true? Or just too late because it's early morning? Yeah, that could also be the case. Yeah.
Let's move on. Next topic.
How to manage admin and tenant user accounts? That's always a difficult question. So how would you recommend to do that then?
I mean, Azure Pack has a default authentication provider, which is for the admin portal, it's Windows authentication. So after initial configuration or installation, if you open the admin portal, you're asked to enter your Windows credentials as long as the site is not trusted in the local internet site security settings. The tenant portal has an authentication mechanism which is based on a SQL itself where Azure Pack lives. So it's just a SQL, or let's say a local user in the SQL database. But this, again, you don't want to have that in production. So you don't want to create users in your SQL database for two facts. Because they are local in the SQL database, you have to create them, separate users, whatever. And of course, maybe you want to federate. So maybe your tenant wants to log in with his own Active Directory account he already has on premises. So here's the way to go. You configure Azure Pack for ADFS claim-based authentication. Could be a local ADFS, could be a remote ADFS, could be even Azure Access Control if you want to federate with social logins like Google or Facebook. So you change that. After initial configuration in a productive environment, you're going for ADFS. That's the way.
We said we don't mention Google in that session.
Oh.
Okay. So use Azure. That's really good.
Could we cut that out after the recording? Did I mention Google? I'm sorry.
Should we domain join then, actually, all the public-facing components? Is that a security risk? Shall we do that, or?
Well, if you should not create a trust from the public-facing part to the internal part. But if you want to manage the servers centrally, then you better have a forest out there. If not, I mean, the public-facing components are not that much, right? It's the tenant portal with the tenant side, tenant authentication, and the tenant public API. If you have two servers, you can do it with the work group and manage them locally, of course.
So the main thing to understand is that if you want to have more security, you probably have more separation. If you have just an internal enterprise deployment for Windows Azure Pack, you can have, well, I wouldn't call it less security, but a different type of deployment. That's an easy one. Do I need VM roles or templates?
This is pretty, that's not that easy.
Oh, it's just an AB question.
Who is using, actually, really using VM roles in Azure Pack and not, okay. VM roles, they are much more capable of extensions or configurable with extensions. They are much more flexible with configuring the pages for the end user where he can enter his, his customizations. You can alter the form for a virtual machine deployment when you're using VM roles. If you're using templates, that means you just create a template in VMM, but then you're stuck with the default configurations like the administrator password, the product key, and the hardware profile. That's it. We can't extend it with different or additional form topics. Maybe you want to select if a tenant creates a virtual machine. Maybe you want him to select if it's highly available or not. You want him to select if it's DR enabled or not with replica. So that's something you can't do that with templates. So you have to use VM roles for this flexibility. So
what you're telling me is basically that if I would use VM roles, then the portal is getting extended with different capabilities.
Yeah, you can do that. It's the view definition where you create additional pages where the user has to go through and fill in the forms, whatever you decide there. Yes, you can do that.
But there's probably something which is more difficult than that. So how do we do a VM role then?
I mean, VM roles are, it's definitely comparable to a service template in VMM. It's just not that. It's a JSON file. And to edit the VM role configuration, there is a GUI called VM role.
What's the name? I'm looking for the name okay. as well, so yeah. It's kind of.
There is a GUI where you can edit the VM roles, so you don't have to edit the JSON file manually. That really helps. But it's much more complex than when you start to create, let's say, applications inside VM roles, which could be a SharePoint or SQL, and the user or the tenant can provision a SQL server from a VM role. That's much more complex. You have to create scripts and put it in the right extension, put it in the right order when it gets deployed. That's much more complex. But it's very flexible. You can do a lot of things here.
I'm not sure if I'm convinced with that. It sounds really complex when I have to edit a JSON file, but great power with great responsibilities. But I still don't get that one.
That's a good one, because we will see in the next slide, I guess, we will see the a possible architecture, and you need a lot of servers.
You know
I
what?
I mean, if you just do IaaS, like SQL and virtual machines, then it's fair enough service you need, but if you're adding the web applications, the platform as a service, like web applications and web platform messaging, you have to add a lot of service just for the web.
Let's cover just the infrastructure as a service part. So what is a typical deployment if you go into that direction? Could you maybe share some best practices from the latest deployment you have done?
I mean, what we see now is that it's just a suggestion how you could do it, because that's an architecture we normally use at service providers. So on the left, you have the fabric part, which I already mentioned. It's SMA, it's SPF, it's VMM, it's the Hyper-V hosts. And if you don't have a trust between the forests, you have a SCOM gateway. So operations manager, gateway, certificate authentication between the management server and the gateway, because you don't have a trust. That's a possible architecture. In the middle, we have the shared services part, meaning if you're using SQL as a service, database as a service, somewhere you have to put the databases on the tenants, which the tenants are creating. And of course, this is not in your holy graal. The fabric is really separated, so we create a SQL instance in the shared services part, where also ADFS lives, usually in this architecture, or we do it like that. And you have all these admin components of the Azure Pack, the admin portal, the admin authentication side, the tenant API. I mean, that's the most confusing part is tenant API, because this is not, it's not really the tenant. The real name is Service Management API, and this is not public facing. The only part which is public facing at the right is the tenant portal, the tenant authentication side, and the tenant public API. The tenant public API is in fact it's the same like you have in Azure, where you can target your resources with PowerShell against the Azure Pack API. You have the same possibilities, not the full blown, but the same look and feel for the APIs on premises. If you want to automate, let's say VM creation or VM stopping, starting, whatever, this is the public side. And these zones, if, I call it zones, they are separated by firewalls, of course. And if you look at the top, we have three forests which are not trusted. That's a possible deployment. If you wanna, you asked about enterprise customers who is using this in his own enterprise without being a service provider, then you could skip the public facing part, of course. I mean, that's just not, if you're not going to expose the public stuff to the internet, then you can skip the public internet facing components, or let's say not skip them, but put them into the shared services. Is this, does that make sense, or who is using a similar architecture like this, more or less? Okay. This is just, I mean, yeah, it's...
It's probably a very secure deployment. So is someone using multiple forests for such a deployment? Okay,
multiple
here
forests?
We go.
Okay, that's...
I think there are different ways how you can deploy that, and probably that deployment has already quite a few components in, like the RD gateway and SCOM and all that, so not every single web deployment has the same architecture. But what we see in hosted deployment is definitely then the multiple forest architecture. I think that's something which is definitely very important to take security as a very important topic. So when we design usually kind of a data center and then we get that verified by security afterwards, we go back to square one. So if they are not involved on the first day, it's kind of very hard to convince them that you need to have different kind of forests or what kind of trust you will have. So better involve them very early to bring them on board and have their insights or their ideas, and then you will have a very smooth or a smoother project. Let's put it that way. Security is never easy. So if you tell me that is an infrastructure as a service deployment, if I just want to do database as a service, would that be different?
You need a lot, you need less components.
Less components, so that's,
I mean, if you do database
point.
As a service, you don't need SPF, you don't need VMM, you don't need Hyper-V.
So
of
if you just want to do shared services on SQL Server, then you don't need the VMM part. You don't need to deploy virtual machines. What we're going to do is to use an existing SQL Server and to provision databases. So actually, we get a lot of requests as part of the SQL Server 2005 lifecycle management to build a new hosted database infrastructure. That's just a perfect fit. Of course, you combine it with the virtual machine deployment, but actually, DB as a service is leveraging an existing SQL Server 2012, 2014 with Resource Governor. That's awesome. That's a real nice use case, very easy to achieve. Just pay attention on the licensing part.
Sorry. I mentioned dedicated AD forests. Why? Just because if you have a tenant hitting your fabric stuff, your fabric components, you don't want to have a tenant on the Hyper-V host. You don't want to have that. And you don't want to have public-facing components on your internal Active Directory. So that's why we create multiple forests, because as you know, the security boundary in Active Directory is not the domain level, it's the forest. And if you create a trust between the forests, your security boundary is gone. That's just fact. If you could create a trust between, let's say, the shared services and the fabric management, but you're never going to create the trust between the public-facing components and the internal stuff. So everything you can do without having trusts, and I really recommend this for service providers, for enterprise organization, I would say it's easier to have a trust.
We did once a session with our internal security team at Microsoft, and then actually we ended up with the best or most secure environment, which means that every single workload ends up in an own trust. I don't say that's doable, because not every workload like SharePoint, Exchange, Link, or whatever do support that type of deployment, but that would be the most secure deployment. We had about 30 forests at the end of the day. So that's not possible. So you really need to be realistic at the end of the day, but having dedicated trusts, forests and no trust, that would be definitely something you should pay attention on.
Yeah, let's move on to the authentication part. As I mentioned, ADFS is the key. So The tenant portal authentication site can have a single authentication provider. By default, this is the local SQL database. You really want to change that to ADFS. So in the shared services part, as we have seen in the middle of the architecture slide, you have the ADFS entry point. From there, you federate with other ADFS ADFS instances. This could be an ADFS instance at the customer's side. Let's say the tenant wants to authenticate on your Azure Pack tenant portal with his own identity he already has in his Active Directory. That's possible. But you have a single entry point for ADFS. So you can't create multiple, let's say, authentication provider contacts from the tenant portal. It's always a single instance, which then federates with other ADFS instances, of course. And there you can have, I don't know, the heck you can have tons of different forwardings by Realm. And here is an important point. The Realm forwarding in ADFS is, of course, based on the DNS, let's say the domain suffix. So if you have tenants which want to federate with their own accounts to the Azure Tenant Portal, and they are using the same suffix in the domain, this could be an issue. This could be a real issue. But again, here you have other possibilities to federate with Azure Active Directory, or even, let's say, the G account, and Facebook, whatever. And I would say it's a five-step deployment. So you create the ADFS instance, you change the authentication provider, you're almost done. So it's not that hard. There are good blog posts from Microsoft, also from Innovative. Mark von Eyck has done a lot in this space. Just go through the part 1-3 on TechNet about ADFS with Azure Pack. You're really done. So it's really easy if you follow the guidelines there. Hyper-V clusters. Did you see the clusters on the left? We had multiple hosts, multiple clusters. There is, of course, a reason to do that. You don't want to have your tenants or your tenant VMs, you don't want to have them on the same infrastructure as your management lives. So the whole management for the private cloud has to be separated on a dedicated cluster. And if you're using NVGRE, who is in fact doing network virtualization with NVGRE? Okay. If you do that, you have to create dedicated Hyper-V host for your NVGRE gateway VMs. You could place it on the management cluster, but you can't place it on the cluster where you have tenant VMs, which are using network virtualization. So that's just a fact. In a typical deployment, we have three clusters. In a, let's say, stripped down deployment, we have two clusters at least, management and tenant.
I would even call it cluster types. You have a management type, you have an NVGRE gateway type, and then tenants. It doesn't mean you have just one cluster for tenants. You may have multiple resource pools, and that are, could be different clusters as well. Even though we support 64 nodes, you may have a different type of sizing for your clusters, which you would like to have. Also, to take into account lifecycle management, maybe you buy servers today, 16 hosts, and then in a year you're going to buy another one. You don't extend the existing one. You're just probably going to build another cluster with 8 or 16 or 32 nodes, whatever is your number you prefer. So that's kind of something which is important to understand. But one question, you just mentioned Hyper-V. So Microsoft is very open for kind of everything, even the G thingy, but do we not support VMware for Azure Pack then? But VMM does.
VMM does, in a somehow limited way. You can manage VMware hosts and clusters from out of VMM. But Azure Pack does not. So if someone asks you, can you deploy Azure Pack and manage my VMware resources? No, you can't. You can't.
So that was actually kind of a design thing, that Windows Azure Pack does not expose VMware as resource pools. Even though Virtual Machine Manager does, and even we have a kind of an open strategy to manage multiple hypervisor, also this Xen server, that's not part of Windows Azure Pack. If you want to do that, if you really want to do that and have to do that, for whatever reason, reach out to us, and then we're going to convince your management to not do it, because Hyper-V is such a great platform to use. But there is also a resource provider, an extension from a third party, which allows to see virtual machine and from VMware and also to deploy it there. But you will lose the strength of Windows Azure Pack because you go a different path. So all this VMware role thingy we had and different type of things are just not used then.
I mean, yeah, it's just not usable anymore.
You just have the same portal, I would say it that way.
Let's say a view-only functionality then, yeah.
So we are quite honest on that part because it's actually really the power of Windows Azure Pack comes with the Microsoft platform. If you use System Center, if you use Hyper-V, then you really get a lot out of it, and the functionality is so rich. If you go into the JSON world, you can do almost everything you want to. If you're then going to add parts which are not really considered to be part of it, then you're just going to lose some pieces of it. That's why we're going to be quite straight on that point. So I want to go back to this VM roles and template things. So we had the discussion about, well, we can do VM roles and we can use virtual machine templates. So there's a table which shows you some of the differences, what can be done and what can't be done. So I want to give you a quick story about the first release of Windows Azure Pack. Who in the audience knows that name? It was not Windows Azure Pack, so that's not V1. So it was Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. That was the very first release when we started with that kind of approach. So
can you repeat that? Windows?
Yeah, Azure I need Server? To focus really. It's kind of Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. And the acronym is even worse. So when we had that, then it was kind of just possible to deploy virtual machines. And as you may have heard before, we can also deploy service templates from VMM. So we assumed that we can also deploy service templates from this, let's call it Azure Pack thingy, in the very first release, and that wasn't possible, so it was not part of it. Now, I had a customer who spent a lot of effort to design a SQL Server deployment with additional scripts and ROM.
Sorry.
We agreed on that is an NDA thingy that we beep when you say something wrong, or I do.
No.
I didn't mention customer names.
My voice okay. is about to disappear, but that's okay.
Okay, I'm gonna talk more then. So basically, then what we had to do is we had to bring in a ROM book to deploy service templates. And at that time, there wasn't SMA, so what we did, we integrated into SPF to say, well, let's just deploy a simple virtual machine, and as soon as that type of job is triggered, you're gonna deploy a service template in the back, delete the initial dummy machine, and register the new service which has been deployed as a highly available SQL Server back into the Azure Pack 1 UI. So VM roles have not been available. At that time, it was just service templates. Now, we designed that. It was a few years ago. It was even in the beta time of the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server program. And yeah, we still had the hope that these service templates come in. Actually, we failed completely because even now they don't have planned to do that. So what I want to say is kind of what you can do today, you can leverage everything, you can extend it, but it doesn't mean that it's the right or the wrong way. So we had some conversation with the product room and said, well, what shall we do now? Shall we move everything to VM roles or shall we just keep it with the service templates as we have it and it's functioning, it's working? And then just said, well, it's supported. I mean, you can do it. It's VMM supports that for 5+5 years. So just, I mean, don't reinvest all the time. If you're happy with it, stay with it. And then for the next wave, when you're going to deploy maybe another SQL Server or maybe you're going to deploy a SharePoint or whatever you want to do, then you're going to leverage the VM roles. Just pay attention on the limits, what can be done and what can't be done, because it has a lot of functionality built in, and it can do a lot, but you need to be able to handle the JSON part as well.
But it's also really, it could be way too complex for a lot of customers to create the VM roles with all the extensions they need to provide, let's say, end-to-end configuration of a SharePoint farm. As an alternative, you can use DSC. You can use DSC on Azure. As an extension, if you create a VM, you can use DSC to inject a DSC configuration into the virtual machine as it gets deployed. You can't do that natively in Azure Pack right now, but as Michel already mentioned, I guess you can trigger an SMA ROM book when a tenant creates a VM role, and there you have the possibility to do anything you want. So let's inject a DSC configuration. Let's configure the VM to connect to the DSC Pulsar, whatever. I'm not saying that this is the only way to go, but look at that as an alternative to the VM role extension configurations, because this is, I mean, this could be really getting complex. And DSC is way more, I would say, flexible and does not need that much of know-how, how where to put the components when a VM gets deployed in comparison to the VM role extensions, if you want to do customization of applications. If you want to trigger an SMA runbook, if a tenant creates a VM role, if a tenant deletes a VM, if a tenant connects a VM to another network, then you can trigger, or you can hook into these SPF triggers from a service provider foundation. You can add a runbook to the trigger. Let's say create VM role starts a runbook which is called trigger SPF create VM. And this runbook does take all the parameters the tenant filled in the form, the VM name, the password, of course. No. all the stuff they configured in the portal, it will be forwarded to the SMA runbook as input parameters. And then, of course, you can create other runbooks which enable the VM for replication for ASR or Hyper-V replica in site-to-site scenario. This is really very easy and flexible if you want to do stuff when something happens on the tenant portal.
I kind of like that. But we are always on stage and say, well, it's very easy. Of course, every beginning is hard. But if you understand the concept and then actually are not disliking PowerShell that much, then you have really a great tool and a baseline where you can start to adjust your deployment or add additional functionality what you would need. And that's not just for service providers, also for enterprises. I mean, they need to integrate with other tools. So if I go to financial, healthcare, whatever companies, they have a huge integration into their networking environment. I mean, no virtual machine is going online with having the MAC address registered. The MAC address is created when the VM gets online the first time and it boots. It's kind of chicken-egg problem. Well, you can use a MAC address from the pool of VMM, or I mean, there are possibilities, but you need to feed that back at the end of the day. SMA can easily handle that. It's as part of the deployment, just hand over the MAC address to the system where all this approval is going to happen, and then you have the connectivity as soon as the VM is ready to talk to the Active Directory. So there's a lot of things happening in the back, and SMA is definitely your best friend there.
I mean, what you see here is just an extract of all the parameters the SMA runbook gets from the creation of a VM role. It's just a subset of tons of parameters. And yeah, as you said, you can use them to trigger other activities. Let's say you want to add the information into your CMDB or service manager when a VM is created, so you have the billing system up to date initially. That's just one possibility of thousands.
If you go to the Microsoft Building Clouds blog, for example, they are posting regularly runbooks which can be used for SMA. There was one recently, well, I think it's even a year ago, but how to patch a VM template. So what it does is just it grabs the VHD, injects some patches in an offline way, and then gives the VM template back. So that means if as soon as you deploy a new virtual machine, it has already the latest patches built in. And that's just an SMA runbook, which is available for free for download. Of course, it's not code which is maintained. It's just sample. But that's actually a good starting point if you want to build some own kind of maintenance scripts or deployment scripts or whatever. But if you are really kind of the guy and say, well, I want to have maintained code. I don't want to build that my own. I mean, you made some experience with some third-party solutions.
Yes. There are a lot of third-party integrations in Azure Pack. Some of them you may already know, like Five9 Security, or GridPro Request Management in combination with Service Manager, Cloud Cruiser for billing, and so on and so on. That there is a lot of stuff out there. It's the fact that GridPro, Five9, and Cloud Cruiser are just some of the most well-known extensions for Azure Pack. That's why I put them here. And of course, I just wanted to show you quickly what the extension could be for you as a differentiator against other service providers or internal organizations. What we see here is that you are not able to see what I see. What we see here is Azure Pack Tenant Portal, of course. And we have an integration of Five9 Cloud Security. Five9 Cloud Security enables a security layer on the Hyper-V host where you don't have to configure your firewall rules VM by VM locally on the virtual machine. It's centrally managed. It's acting on the logical or, let's say, virtual switch layer on the Hyper-V host. It does firewall. It's a firewall with packet inspection, with stateful. It's a stateful firewall, and it's also a component which can scan your network traffic against IDS intrusion detection system rules. On top of that, you have a central managed antivirus engine, which is scanning your virtual machines also on the layer of the Hyper-V parent OS. So you don't have to install any antivirus agent on the VM itself. So it's acting in the layer of the virtual switch, and the tenant is able to configure his own firewall rules if you enable him to do that. So let's say you have a tenant which creates tons of virtual machines. Some of them are web servers. Some of them may be back-end applications or database servers. And he wants to have a basic security layer between the public-facing stuff, the web servers, and the database servers. He can do firewalling, managing the firewall rules by his own, or he can have it as a service. If you want to do that for him, it's enabled for automation, so you can script all the stuff here, and the tenant can create his own firewall rules. He can use templates. You can provide him templates, so he just plug a template on his virtual machine, which is maybe open HTTPS or HTTP for all my virtual machines. He can plug into the template and use it straight away. So Five9 Cloud Security is just an example how you could extend your services in Azure Portal and create more value for your tenants. Because at the end, all you need is a flexible framework. The tenant can provision his services. And if you're using GridPro or Five9 as an extension for Azure Pack, this opens so much of new possibilities than just doing virtual machines provisioning. The layer of Five9 security is really a good one. It's a good example. And of course, you have the admin portal as well, where you're able to configure more than just firewall rules. You can enable. Okay. You can enable the tenant to notify the tenant if something happens. Let's say a virus plops in, or you have suspicious network traffic going on in virtual machines. You can create notifications per email base, or let's say every 30 minutes you get a report of ongoing traffic. That's really an added value. So the ecosystem in Azure Pack is really huge. It depends what you need, but I don't know how many extensions we have, like 30?
The interesting point there is that quite a few are not known. So even the big players in the hardware market are creating resource providers and extensions for Azure Pack. So they want to leverage also that kind of possibility to integrate into their network stack or in the hardware stack to give you actually the same experience as Five9. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I definitely recommend to keep an eye open on all these hoster events which are happening, because there is actually the time where we announced these partnerships. We have started great work with Cisco back in February, I think. So we are definitely working with them very closely. And you know, Cisco is big in networks, firewalling, compute. So you can expect a lot out of that partnership as well. So basically, there is no limit. And if you don't have, your hardware or whatever vendor which creates your resource provider, you can still do your own. or there are also partner companies which are creating resource provider on your behalf. Cloud Assert is the one which is also giving you the VMware integration, has an own billing one, has backup integration into Veeam, and they are creating resource provider on request. So that's definitely a great partner. Based in Seattle, what a coincidence.
I mean, an additional thing, you might have seen it at Ignite this spring. DPM as a service, backup as a service, is coming as an extension from on Azure Pack, so we can enable your tenants to, let's say, backup or restore virtual machines by themselves. So backup as a service as an extension in Azure Pack, which is coming very soon, yeah.
That's actually a great teaser to talk about Azure Pack roadmap. So that was actually just an announcement about a feature which has been added later on to an existing product. So what I want to show you here is kind of what happened in, well, what's that, it's quite a long time. So since January last year, 2014, what happened? So we released updates on the quarterly schedule. So we started with update one, that was after the RTM, and then every 3 months we shipped another update. We are now on release 7. And with every single update, we don't just do bug fixing. So you assume that's kind of the same as we do with Windows Server. These days are gone. We really enable the platform for more functionality, not only in Windows Azure Pack, also products like DPM, VMM, they just got new functionality. VMM has now a view to integrate Azure. You can create a cloud and see all your Azure virtual machines. And if you look at the key enhancements in Windows Azure Pack, that's just a lot. Sometimes it seems like a small feature, like multiple NIC support. But if you understand what it takes to create that and how much discussions we had with the product group to get that done. I mean, these are just big achievements. And I think you had one specifically with the checkpoints where you had to debate with the product group to get that done.
That's a good point to talk about the product group, because Azure Pack product group is fantastic in terms of they listen to you. They listen to the customers, they listen to us. So if we scream for a feature, or if we report, let's say, bugs or missing functionality, they're really quickly trying to adopt it and trying to put it into the next release of the update rollup. So in fact, the checkpoint deletion is something we just asked for as a feature because it was missing. So the tenant could create checkpoints, but he was not able to delete it. And I mean, that could just be forgotten, of course. But they are adding so much functionality every update rollup. This is really an added value for us to have this conversations all going, let's say, on a monthly base. We discuss the features we want to have in the next release, and of course there is a user voice as well where customers can vote for new features. So I really recommend you to go to the user voice of Azure Pack and ask or vote for features you really need, because they get prioritized as you vote. So the most voted features, there's a huge chance they're going to make it into the next rollup update.
I wouldn't be that specific about next rollup update, but there's a good chance that the PG is looking at that and they are considering for a future update or release or whatever. Just to be a little bit more political here, because I think it's recorded. So I think that what you need to understand is that Microsoft is not just designing products and they assume it's going to work and it's the best one ever. It's kind of, we understood a customer has an own opinion as well, and they deploy it not always the way we designed it. That means there is a lot of things we want to hear, and that's definitely something you should leverage. So this user voice, that's just an easy channel. You can add a feature request, describe it, why it's important for you, and then other guys can vote and say, well, that's exactly what I needed. So, for example, one feature I like is the Azure Site Recovery integration. So I don't say that was coming from user voice, but if that is something you need, then just you describe why. Because you want to have high availability for your virtual machines or your customer virtual machines by enabling just a checkbox in the portal. And that then actually gives you the chance to use Azure or a secondary data center just to get your replica then there.
Which leads me to an important thing. If you update Azure Pack, let's say, as an isolated component, you have to update the whole stack. That's really important. So you can't just update Azure Pack or the tenant API or just a single component. You have to do it through the whole path of your framework. Like updating Azure Pack means updating also SPF to the most recent version, updating VMM to the most recent version, which aligns with the update rollup with, of Azure Pack, of course. So that's an important thing. If you're going to update, think about the whole stack. You can't just leverage Azure Pack to the next level without touching all the other components. That's a mistake I've seen a few times, and things break.
That's just coming from previous versions. If you go back in time, like System Center 2007, every single product was available as a standalone product. And then with 2012, we moved that into a suite. That meant from a licensing perspective, it was a data center suite. So if you buy one, you get all. You pay also for all, but that's a different kind of discussion. But then on the other hand, it's also designed as one suite. So we have huge integration between operations manager and VMM, service manager, and all of those components. But if you upgrade one, then you need to make sure that the other still have the same level, because otherwise the integration will break. And there's a specific order, just from a Windows Azure Pack perspective, but also from a System Center perspective. So with every update you're going to install, check TechNet. There's great material out, and they're going to describe you exactly which component has to be updated first, what has to be done, what has to be considered. And if you follow that direction, if you follow those instructions, then you will end up not in pain, as others might have done. So, of course, it's complex. There are multiple components to consider, but I think it's definitely worth it to upgrade if you look at those features. What also is something we have done from a Microsoft perspective, we have been designing CPS, the Cloud Platform System. So that's a partnership we have done with Dell and at Barcelona TechEd. This last year we announced that one. So it's a rack full of compute, storage, and network. And we have the System Center Azure Pack stack on it. And the Peachy designed that kind of kit. And during that design phase and build phase, they learned a lot. And also some of these upgrades or features or bug fixes have been coming from that exercise. And looking back, that's just the best thing which could have happened, that the different product groups from Windows Server, System Center, and Azure Pack have been put together, in a closed room, locked down for maybe 18 months, and they had to install it and to make it work. And that's also why you see quite a big updates coming since last year. So there's a lot of enhancement coming from that effort. Now, what's really important to me that you guys take that with you, Windows Azure Pack has a support lifecycle, as every support product at Microsoft. So that means if you have an issue, you can call Microsoft support, Premier support, whoever is your main contact there, and that's just available since 2017. If you're going to go into extended support, that's just another 5 years. So that in total, you have 5 plus 5, which means 10 years of product support by Microsoft. So we're going to help you with your current deployments. We do have updates coming till 2017. That's just the roadmap we had. So that will continue. We will give bug fixes. We will have customer feedback and try to prioritize then actually the enhancements according to that. And then actually Windows Azure Pack will support new releases of System Center and Windows Server. So that's a tricky one. And I know that there are some, let's put it that way. There's a big elephant in the room. I think it's called Windows Azure Stack. And I will now be very careful on my wording, and I don't want to see any tweets about that. So Windows Azure Stack will be the future of anything in the data center, kind of. It builds on the next Windows Server. So Windows Server 2016 will be the foundation of Windows Azure Stack, and Michael will later explain more details about that great product. But what we need to understand is, when will it be there? It was announced at Ignite, and it was a vision which has been showed by the product group, and actually we have been overwhelmed with all the great feedback. And if you look at it, kind of having an Azure-ready data center, an Azure-like data center, that's just what we want. Being a techie by heart, that's just great. If you see what is possible on Azure and we get similar technology on-premise, fantastic. But today, it's not yet there. And if I have to build a data center today, do I really want to bet on a vision, or do I take whatever is in the market available? So even though there is a great technology coming, I would still bet on everything which is available today and I can control, which means System Center 2012 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, and Windows Azure Pack. And that's very important to me that you guys take that with you, because that's available today, and we have not announced a release date for Windows Server 2016, System Center 2016, or even Azure Stack. So that's not available. What we have said in a blog post is that it will be available in calendar year 2016. And that's kind of a huge range. That's all I can say about that. Now, if you just compare that with buying a car or a TV, the newer is always better. If that product is coming out in a few months...
I mean, it's different. Better?
But different.
In some...
Newer is always better. Don't you watch How I Met Your
it's
Mother?
Different. Doesn't have to be better at all.
It's just, I mean, it has different probably scenarios in it. It has different features, functions, whatever. But you have to be honest with yourself, and especially with the management stakeholders or customers, which are responsible also for the budget. Do I need it, or can I fulfill everything today already? Well, that was probably too sales pitchy, but yeah.
That's the marketing slide you have to put in, right?
But yeah, just keep in mind what isn't available today, that's what you should bet on. And if something great is coming in the future, evaluate what it means to you, to your business, to your stakeholders, and then plan everything as soon as you have control about the software. But anyhow, I think it's definitely worth to have a sneak peek with careful wording.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'm not going to breach my NDA right now. Who has heard about Azure Stack? Most of you people, I guess. Who really knows what Azure Stack is? Or do you really think you know what Azure Stack is? I mean...
There should not be any hands. There are
I mean, we have seen some stuff coming up with Azure Stack. But a thing to keep in mind is just Azure Stack is a completely new product. It's not just a portal which is changing. It's a whole stack which is combined to a new product, or let's say a solution. It's based on Windows Server 2016 as the foundation, of course. You will have a new portal. What we know so far, it will be a single portal with RBAC resource-based access control. And one important component is ARM. ARM is the abbreviation for Azure Resource Manager. So Azure Resource Manager is a, let's say, a framework for creating, deploying, maintaining, servicing services. Multi-tier services. Let's say you have a multi-tier application with VMs and web applications and whatever you want to create, you create it with Azure Resource Manager, which is based on templates. Azure Resource Manager takes templates, which are JSON files, and it's the JSON files are just declarative what you want to deploy. You can deploy a template for a group of virtual machines, for SQL databases, whatever. And the most important part here is that ARM, as you have it now on the portal, on the new preview portal of Azure, if you go to portal.azure.com, that's the new portal which will come some... I don't know when.
Don't look at me, I will not add anything here.
The new portal, you can try it out. You can try it out, the new portal, you can try out the Azure Resource Manager, and Azure Stack, in fact, will enable you to create templates either on Azure or in Azure Stack with the same technologies. You can use the same templates on premises as well as on Azure. That's where we talk about this vision from having one platform, and you can decide to create it on premises. You can create it on the service provider level where if Azure Stack is enabled there, or in Azure. So this story continues to have a single technology framework in the public cloud as well as on premises. And if you look at the architecture of Azure Stack, again, this is stuff which has been announced at Ignite. There's a lot more coming up next year, but this is what we know so far from the architecture side. You still have your compute, you still have your storage, your network, And then you, on top of that, you have the Azure Stack Core resource providers. The Azure Resource Manager lives as a component on top of the core management resources, as well as the user-facing services like the portal with the browser experience you have on Azure right now, the preview portal. It will be, as we know so far, it will be the same user experience as you have on Azure. And one question always coming up here. Do I still need System Center or not? Do you see System Center here?
So let's go to the key takeaways then.
What we know so far is System Center will still be there. It will not be there for all of the components, but for example, you want to manage your fabric still with VMM. You have to manage your fabric. But it might be the case that you don't need System Center for the virtual machine path deployment path. That's something which has been announced at Ignite, that the resource provider for virtual machine will be changing. But you still need System Center. That's important. System Center will not be going away and replaced by Azure Stack. That's keep that in mind.
There are quite a few sessions at this SU about what's new in VMM, Ops Manager, whatever. So that just should give the proof that there is everything in the next release. So that's very important to take away. Azure Stack is also not for every scenario. So not every customer will take that or a service provider. So there's still a lot to justify or to clarify. And I think it's important to stay on online and check what is coming. And probably in the next few months, next year, whenever is ready, then we're going to share the details on it. And then there will also probably be some software available. Who knows? I think stay tuned. That's the best thing we can say. That's the future. But future is somewhere. We don't know when.
There's nothing holding you back to create your private cloud right now with Azure Pack. If you want to wait for Azure Stack, we don't know when it's coming out exactly. So the key takeaways for you as, let's say, as a user or a user of Azure Pack or a service provider, Windows Azure Pack can be used right now to create a private cloud or a hybrid cloud environment, or let's say as a service provider, you want to provide the same functionalities for IaaS and SQL as a service, for example, as you have it on Azure. But I really recommend you to look at the TechNet article. And my fault, I wanted to include here a link to a OneNote document, which is living on TechNet. It's initially created by a colleague of MVP colleague of mine, Hans Fredefort, together with his colleagues, created a really great OneNote document which combines all the stuff you have on information about how to deploy Azure Pack, how to deploy SMA, whatever you find there. It's if you want to have the link, or if you don't find it, just write me an email or ping me up on Twitter. I can send you the link. If you don't find it, just search for Azure Pack TechNet documentation and you will get there. For a security perspective, you already mentioned why we have to be secure, why we create those different zones and trusts and 80 forests, whatever. Why?
We have some customers sitting on that infrastructure and they pay good money and they want to be secured. They trust you. So it's actually your brand, their trust, their money. So
be secure means I know that there is a lot of stuff you have to do to separate the things, to manage untrusted environments. But at the end, if you breach your trust, if you lose the trust from your customers because you have a security incident, you're very quickly out of the market. That's just fact. So as a service provider, keep an eye on the security and separate the important components into different zones, as you have seen in the architecture.
I think you covered that one already quite well. If you want to start today, leverage what we have shared, leverage the OneNote, which has been created by Hunt and the team. So I think there's nothing holding you back to create a great Azure-like infrastructure with current available software. And if there are any questions, I mean, we are at the conference for the next 1.5 days, we are at the booth at IDNetX and Microsoft. Just show up if you have any kind of questions. And having that said, we want to say thank you for showing up, staying here, staying awake. And I hope you enjoy SCU and see you next year.
Thank you.